once again, we ask that if you are contacted by any press or anything, to please get up with a member of the convention committee and let them deal with it. We have a couple of gentlemen here today that share their experience, strength, and hope with you. And I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to let them get to it. Richard lost the toss, so he has to go first. So I give you Richard S.
Love you too, man. Give me a hug.
Calm me down.
I'm an act man, Richard.
Richard.
You would think, as being a double amputee, it would be easy to get up here and talk about physically challenged. But we always forget about the disease of addiction, which is a disease of self-illusion. So you really don't think you're what other people think you are. You understand what I'm saying? Because we always judge their outsides by my insides. So I don't look at myself as physically challenged. But what I can say, and if you can see, I only have two fingers that actually work on this hand. Cool. Want me to start all over again?
No.
Yeah. I want to thank everyone for being here. I also want to thank the commission committee for asking me to participate. Because one of my biggest challenges is volunteering to participate. But I also know that when they ask, you never say no. So, like I said, I'm a double amputee. I have two fingers that work on this hand. I would like to say that they inhibited me from recovery, but that would be a lie. It was the disease of addiction that gets in my way all the time. It's a disease that makes me want to think that I'm the same as everybody else, but I'm not as good as everybody else. A disease that makes me think, I'll show you, let me hurt me. Whether it be physically or mentally. It's a disease that tells me everything's going to be all right while I'm on my way to jail. It's a disease that tells me this is the best thing when I'm standing in front of a judge for a divorce. It's a disease that tells me I can't do this. But I have never seen anybody physically not be able to do a program of Narcotics Anonymous. Only mentally. Especially today, see. Everybody thinks this disease that came along called COVID was a terrible thing. But I want you to look how Narcotics Anonymous evolved. We have Zoom meetings. We have when you get 73, words just fly out of your brain. We have meetings that meet in person and on the telephone, on the computer. You have face to face. You have just voices. You can have a meeting anywhere you want to, and if you look, you can do a meeting almost 24 hours a day, laid up in your bed, because Today, you just don't want to get out of bed. And it's still not about physical, it's about mental. So, let me tell you what I've seen since I've been in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I've seen men carry a wheelchair up three flights of steps for the man in the wheelchair to be able to make a meeting. I've seen men and women change meeting places because it wasn't handicap accessible. I've met many people. You know, the first time I went to a meeting, I was court ordered the first time, and I called everybody a bunch of whiny asses and said I'd never go back. 2 years later, I crawled into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, not wanting to stay clean, just wanting to stay clean long enough to get rid of them people, the judges, the lawyers, the community control officers, the probation officer, you know, the police from coming by the house on a regular basis, the shooters, the booters, the voodoo hooers. Because I knew how to use drugs sensibly. It was just all those people. I remember in treatment, they said, what are some of the things that make you want to use drugs? And everybody was going, a paycheck, a girlfriend breaking up with you. Because I want to use drugs. I didn't have any excuse. I just wanted to get high. I didn't want to feel no more. Because my disease had made me think I'm somebody that I'm not. It made me think I was worthless. Even though I had the job, the wife, the two-car garage, I still felt worthless. Because there was this big hole right here. And I didn't know how to fill it. And Narcotics Anonymous taught me that. Taught me that it's going to be okay. No matter what. All I got to do is stay clean today. You know, Robert asked me how everything was going. I go, well, I slept till 6 o'clock this morning. I had a good day yesterday. We'll find out what today is going to be like. See, because as we get older, and being a double amputee and walking on an artificial leg for the last 54 years, your back comes apart. Being ignorant and trying to prove that you're not handicapped and doing things that you shouldn't be doing, your shoulders and your arms and your back and your legs all come apart and your hips come apart. And you go to bed at night and you wake up 2 hours later and your hips are hurting so bad or your shoulders are hurting so bad. And you just know that it's going to be okay. If I just don't pick up. See, because my disease tells me, man, you just need a sleeping pill. Man, you just need a pain medication. Man, you just need this, you just need that. And I go, no, I don't. What I need to do is stay clean. What I need to do is not run another wife off. What I need to do is not alienate myself from my children. What I need to do is stay in the middle of this program and the people in it. So anyway, the second time I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, let me lie to you. The second time I was ordered to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, she said, "Miss, I was on house arrest. I'd pulled 30 days at the VA treatment center and I just used again, and of course all the other probation officers and community control officers I'd had previously only knew me high. None of them had ever known me clean. This one knew me clean. And the first time I got high and she pulled up, she knew exactly what was going on. And she said, "What's wrong with you, Mr. Smith? Well, my wife and I just had this big fight, and I'm supposed to go to Narcotics Anonymous. You should have told me that." And so I went to Narcotics Anonymous. And she said, "You leave here at 7:45, do the meeting, and be back here by 9:15, and I'll be here. And if you don't have this piece of paper signed, we're going to have a talk." And I go, "Okay." So I went up there, and I drove by, and there was all young people. Not a double amputee, not a handicapped person in sight. I just drove right on back, went right on home. And she showed up at 9:15. And she said, "Mr. Smith, where's your paper?" "Well, I didn't go." You know how we do. We have all these 192 excuses why we didn't show up. And she said, "Mr. Smith, there's a meeting at the same place tomorrow night. And I want you to go there." And it was on the second floor. Automatically, well, if there are damn steps, I ain't going up it. There was an elevator. So I went up the elevator, went to the meeting, saw all the differences, didn't see any similarities, but I wanted to stay clean long enough to get rid of all them people. And I kept suiting up and showing up, never saying a word. Never said, "Hi, I'm an addict. My name's Richard." Principles before personality. Addict is the principal. Personality is Richard. That's why I say, "I'm an addict and my name is Richard." So, I stayed for the meeting. Got home. She was sitting there waiting on me. Had my little piece of paper signed. I was so proud of myself. First time in a long time I'd done something I was proud of. Except when I put a big score together, you know, I was proud then. Till I went to jail for it. I always have to say that they do not know how to handcuff a one-handed man. I've had handcuffs put on and they just hang down. I've had them hooked to this belt loop. I've had them hooked to my belt. Most of all, they just put it on and let it hang down because you have to be handcuffed. Right after I quit using, I got a job as a dispatch manager for an automobile dealership that was the largest commercial fleet dealer in the state of Florida, and I had 23 drivers. And I used to tell them all that we sold a lot of cop cars. And I used to tell them all, "I've never sat in the front seat of a cop car until I got here." But I sat in a lot of cop cars. They just look at me. They had no clue what the deal was. So what I know is, I have no clue what the tongue is. What I know is, if I keep coming and I keep showing up, and I don't pick up, my life gets better. No matter what the handicap is. No matter what the pain of my body is. No matter what. Because most of the time I can get up and walk around a little bit. Everything kind of evens out a little bit. You know, it's really neat. I moved to Tennessee last year. I was getting Eli as my service animal. We have two service animals today. How awesome is that? They are accepting us more and more for who we are and what our needs are. It's just awesome. Anyway, I had made I'd called a place in Ithaca, New York, about a service animal. I'm 100% disabled vet. And they said, "Yes, Mr. Smith." They sent me the paperwork. I filled everything out. "You're going to get your dog. You qualify for a dog." COVID hit. They called me up and said, Mr. Smith, don't come to Ithaca, New York. I go, okay. She says, everything up here is full of COVID. You don't want to be here. I go, okay. So we're moving up to Tennessee, and we're driving up the road, you know, and we got everything in the truck, in the U-Haul truck, and we're just driving along. And I just happened to pick up my phone because that's who I am. I'm a Googler. So I put service dogs for vets, Tennessee. And it gave me a place in Lawrenceburg, which is 48 miles doorstep to doorstep from my house. So I'm talking to this guy. His name is Ken. It's called Working Dogs for Vets. And Ken, I tell Ken, I'm moving up here in a U-Haul van, got a load of stuff. And he said, well, as soon as you get settled, call me. And I said, okay. So on my side, I was going, they told me to call him. Maybe I'm going to get me a dog here in Tennessee. And on their side, they're going, well, I've got this dog that's been trained by a left-handed person, and I don't know what to do with it. So we got all settled in about 2 weeks later, and I called Ken up, Working Dog for Vets. And Ken says, can you come over? And I said, yeah, I'll be over there Wednesday. So 2 days later, we took off over there, and I was sitting there, and we talked for about an hour, hour and a half. I don't know where I got all the language from or words from, because I'm not a big talker. And Ken says, I'll be back in a minute. I go, okay. So he left, he come back. He had this dog right here named Eli. Eli kind of come over and looked at me, and I kind of petted him. He just laid down, went to sleep. Ken says, he don't look over happy about you. He said, but he sure is comfortable around you. Why don't you take him home? I go, okay. He said, come back Saturday. I go, okay. So I took him home. Saturday we went back, and he said, how'd everything go? I said, fine. You know, we built a big run for him, a 20 by 60 foot run, and Eli could go out, and little Max could go out, and they'd have a good time out there, So since August of year before last, Eli's been in my life. After I got here and he got everything unloaded, I had two pinched nerves in my back, one between my shoulders, couldn't move my arms. One in my lower back, couldn't walk. Couldn't get out of bed. Couldn't get out of a chair. Eli been with us about a month. And we could put Eli's harness on him, and I could hold on to his harness. He would pull me up out of a chair. Then he would help me take my jacket off or shirt off, take my sock off, take my shoes off. Well, not my shoes, but take my pants off. He'd pull my pants off for me. Eli became my best buddy. I've never had a dog that was a friend. I've had hunting dogs. You know, I've had guard dogs. I've never had a dog to live in my house that was my buddy. I had a dog that lived in my house because it was her buddy. And he always gave me up for cookie dough. She said, she would go, he's my dog. No, it's my dog. And she'd pull out the cookie dough and the dog would go with her. But I really didn't know what to talk about, because I have more mental challenges than I do physical challenges in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, what I did do is, when I wrote my first step out, and I was going over with my first sponsor, and that was back when all we had was pirated step work. We didn't have a step working guide. That happened after I got here. And And I would write down my first step, and so we got together, and I was, he would, we was going over it, and I go, "What does this say right here?" He said, "Richard, if you wrote it and can't read it, how do you expect me to read it?" And I go, "Oh, that's kind of stupid, isn't it?" He said, "Go rewrite it and slow down and write it better." So I learned to print. See, I don't know about y'all, but it had been years since I had written anything. It had been years since I'd actually read anything, because my whole life was about dope. And I found out in Narcotics Anonymous, see, because they told me to get a dictionary, because what I believe certain words meant, it didn't mean that. And I found that everything I've been told in the program of Narcotics Anonymous was the God's honest truth. Now, people might lie to you, but the literature don't. So I continue to come here. Used to be able to drive to a meeting in 3 minutes. Now it's 45 minutes. Ain't but 17 miles, but it's 45 minutes. Because we live out in the middle of nowhere in God's country. We used to sit through a red light 4 or 5 times in Florida. Not here. We used to traffic stopping on I-4, on I-75. You could sit for hours. Not here. Sometimes the only person goes down my road is the mailman. Not in Florida. What I have found is the hills and the rocks are very challenging for an artificial leg. But that doesn't mean that you slow down. It just means that you knuckle down and continue working on it. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous has taught me. You know, everybody does 3 steps, then it kind of slows down. And what you don't realize is the freedom comes from steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. 8 and 9 is the freedom steps. I know when I got here, I asked somebody to sponsor me, and he goes, "I've got too many sponsees." You know what I heard? You don't need a sponsor. So I didn't get a sponsor for quite a while. I didn't even think I was an addict for quite a while. That's what I was going to say a while ago. I came to the rooms, and every time somebody would share, because it was a large group, every time somebody would share, I'd say, "So-and-so sharing on a year here, I need to be there so I can learn." And they would laugh. By the time I got off of community control, I was doing 7 meetings a week. Because what they said was, the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. So I continued doing 7 meetings a week for 5 years. I didn't think I was an addict. I just wanted to stay clean long enough to get rid of all them people. And at 6 months clean, somebody shared that if there was a pill for recovery and all you'd have to do is take this one pill, you'd be healed. And everybody kind of snickered and laughed. And a few days later, I picked up some antibiotics and wondered what 2 would do. And I surrendered to the fact that I was an addict. And a calm came over me like I'd never had before. I don't know about y'all, but I always felt like a can of night crawlers, couldn't live in my own skin until that day. Because now, because for 6 months, I'd listen to y'all tell me what I was, how I could change it, which way direction I need to go, and I felt okay. So now, 25 years later, I'm still making meetings on a regular basis because people who make meetings regularly stay clean. And when I die, I want to know that I didn't give away another house, another wife, another car, my children, that everybody's still, that I'm doing the best I can. And I can only do that through Narcotics Anonymous. And I continue to come here. Eli goes to meetings on a regular basis. And he just kind of does that. He's just okay as long as I don't get upset. He's okay. Out there, he was had his guard up for me. He was backed in between my legs. Recovery is an awesome thing. And I don't care if you have a physical handicap or not. Don't listen to your own mind. Listen to what the people in the rooms tell you and suggest. Because it's experience, strength, and hope that gets us through each day. I want to thank my predecessors. I want to thank the commission committee. I want to thank all of y'all for putting up with me for the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Yeah. And I'm going to say thank you.
Let's give him another hand, y'all. I give you Roger now. You know, I've been very, very fortunate. Both these members, both these gentlemen, come to my home group pretty regularly. You know, and it gives me a whole new understanding of the fellowship, not just the program, y'all, but the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I give you Roger.
Man, here, I'm gonna put you in the doghouse. He all right over there, Richard?
Huh?
He all right? You knucklehead.
Yep.
No doubt. Do I get to hide behind you?
She all right?
Do I get to hide behind you for you, man? Put this down here.
You all right?
Yeah, she's good, man. I hate that.
That's from that other dog.
Could be. Yeah. Yeah, I'm an addict, and my name's Roger.
Roger?
Yeah. Let me figure out this microphone here.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, I'd like to take a moment just to let God get in my life, man. You know, let him tell my story. All right. Yeah, like I said, I'm an addict, and my name's Roger. And I say it that way because I don't like to lose stuff. I've lost a lot of stuff. I put nothing in front of my recovery. You know, I don't put myself in front of it because my disease thinking. But I walked into the rooms a lot. Nobody here knows it. I got clean in 1991. I walked into, I came out of jail, went to treatment, which court mandated to go to a treatment center, and I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous from there, from H&I. Had no idea what H&I meant, but I learned what it was, and that's my niche today. I do a lot of H&I, going to state prisons, doing county jails, doing treatment centers, and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. I got turned on to that, you know, up in New York, where I got clean up in upstate New York. And I'm glad I'm not there today, man. I talked to my sister yesterday. There's over 3 foot of snow where she's at, and I do not want to be there. You know, but it's fun in a wheelchair, let me tell you, man. You know, yeah. But, yeah, like I said, you know, I walked in the rooms. I'm not military or anything like that. My dad died at a young age of 40. My grandfather died when he was 55. I'm 61, and because of today's technology, I was born with, there's some bad blood that on my dad's side of the family, and I was the one that was born with it, you know. I would be getting high with my friends, and they always ask, why do you glow red? And I had no idea. You know, I'd be like 15, 16, stoned out of my mind. And I'd be bright red, and, it, you know, I didn't know I had high blood pressure. It was about me getting high. I didn't care about that stuff, you know. I used to go home and lay down in front of the TV, and, you know, my parents don't know what I was doing, man, you know. And that progressed for me. You know, the using and all that, you know. And, say a little bit, you know, I participated, you know, in my active addiction like all you did, man. You know, I was a participant in mine, you know. And I had these glitches. You hear about, but I have glitches. Sometimes I stop when I'm sharing. I call them a glitch. That's just part of me today. I accept it. If you don't, oh well. You know, and my disease are telling me that them glitches aren't good, man. You don't need to look. When that first started happening, I couldn't tell you what was wrong with it. What was wrong with me, man, you know? And, you know, that's a whole different. This isn't my disability. You know, before I lost my legs, they were like operated on a whole bunch, you know, different operations, you know. I remember I was, it was in 95 when I had my first leg amputated. My sponsor was at the house. He came down, you know, I don't understand, but they wanted my leg to die. They wanted to see if they could fix it, you know, and see if they could, you know, do something to it. And, you know, my sponsor came down and you know, he looked at my mom and said, he needs to go to the hospital now. We're not waiting for the ambulance. And my brother looked at him, and Jay went like, picked me up and told him, my brother, open your car door, man. We're rushing him to the hospital, man. He needs to go to the emergency room. And what was cool, that he sat next to my bed after the when he got there, I laid a day in bed. They were taking me back and forth, doing all kinds of testing and everything, and he sat next to my bed. And then I was out of it. I didn't, you know, after it was amputated and all that, and I was out of it for 3 days, and he told the doctors that I'm going to sit here. They, you know, they asked him, why are you sitting here, sir? Why are you here? You can't stay here at night. And he's looking at him like, oh, yeah, I can. And he goes, well, the nurses and we're taking care of him. But see, when he wakes up, he's going to need me. You can't give him what he's going to need, all right? You know, and he sat next to my bed for 3 days in the hospital. And, you know, that's something that my disease told me. After, you know, I was able to help sponsees out from that experience, man. You know, I had a sponsee that his, you know, son died in a real bad motorcycle accident. He was working, and I was at the front of the emergency room for him. You know, I was able to do that. And I, you know, just was there for him. You know what I mean? And that's all I had to do. I didn't know that I, you know, my disease would tell me I can't do stuff like that, you know? And, you know, I was working a job, you know, that somebody said, hey, you ought to go, you know, maybe you can get on disability, man. And I'm like, you know, I didn't qualify. You know, I had a good job. I was making good money, you know. I, like, got my prosthetic. I got, you know, after about 6 months, I started walking with my prosthetic. And, you know, I went back to work. And, you know, I remember, you know, I'm one of those people that Richard talked about. I've had men pick me up in my wheelchair and bring me down to a meeting, you know. And... you know, something I do, I race 5 and 10K races, and for the exercise, you know, I'll get in, and I'm just grateful to be here today. This is awesome, because last time I was here, you'll hear about that in a little bit, you know, and you were here, now I'm going to back up a little bit. I don't even know why I was at right there. You know, that's what I mean. I had a stroke back in 06. And I have a short-term memory loss. That's my glitches. I'll forget what the hell I'm talking about. I might have to ask you, what did I just say? You know, that's my disability. That's why this isn't. This hasn't stopped me. You know, my legs, I keep going. And go. You know what I mean? There's a lot of historic buildings that are grandfathered in that, you know, they're just not being able to make a ramp to them. But a lot of them have been that, you know, they don't have to attach it to the building, And, you know, we got a nice pamphlet in the program. It's about accessibility in the rooms for people that are deaf. They can't talk. And, you know, people in wheelchairs, man. You know, we need to make this accessible for all recovering addicts, you know, to suffering, anybody, you know, when you come. You know, I love a Zoom meeting. You know, I've met some men and women online that got like 18 months, 2 years clean, and they ain't never been to a meeting yet. Man. You know, physical challenges and recovery. I think my first physical challenge, I was like 4 months clean, and I went to this camp out, and they had a hugging line. I didn't want, that was my first physical challenge, that I had to go through, get a hug from 25 people. You know, where I came from, men didn't hug other men. You know, today I love a hug, man. A hug is better than any dope I've ever done. That was one of my attractions to Narcotics Anonymous, because probably my first attraction with my higher power was that, who's an addict? You know, my whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways to get more. And that's, look at this circle today, man. It's big, man. You know, I didn't go outside of that. You know, everybody in my life got high, you know, and that's what it was about. I didn't hang out with people who didn't get high. I remember when I got clean, it was like, man, I just, you know, when I started working the steps, man, oh yeah, I found out I had all these problems, man, all these insecurities and, you know, all this stuff going on with me, you know, and that was good, you know, because I know I'm a better man for that today, you know. And, but, you know, back, you know, to my, I don't like calling it a disability. I don't feel I'm disabled. You know what I mean? When I, 95, I lost my first leg. And then in 03, I started having some more problems with my left leg. You know, I was walking real good with my prosthetic. I was going to work. You know, I used to work at a pitcher tube plant, and I'd, you know, doing all kinds of stuff, man. You know, I wasn't able to do what other guys were able to do. You know, I was able to do what I could do. You know what I mean? And that was, and there was one of the supervisors says, I don't want him here. I went and got trained for this job. You know, you like promotion, you like to do better at work, and you know, this dude says, well, he's not going to work in this department, and I'm like, what does he mean? You know, and the next day I was working there, man, what he had to say didn't matter, you know, and, what was really strange, with my second leg I lost, you know, I have to go back to the first one. I mourn that, you know. When I lost that leg, I thought I was less than a man. You know, my disease talking to me. There ain't no woman going to want me with one leg. Well, you know, I got nothing to offer anybody now, man. You know, I remember standing at my mom's, man, and I didn't want to do nothing. What was great, I had, you know, I got clean in 91, so, you know, I had men in my life that would come and get me. You know, that would take me down to meetings, man. And, you know, we're not going to let you be a whiny, cranny, you know, crybaby, man. We're taking you to a meeting, you know. And, you know, I was working with my sponsor, man, you know. I was working with him, you know, my second sponsor. It's cool. I met a dude yesterday that my old sponsor's part of his sponsorship family. I know some brothers, man. That's like cool. It's a small world we live in, and you know, it's like you show up and you're going to meet a lot of people. But, my second amputation, you know, it was about same time, about 6 months before I go back to work, you know. And, all right, I'm in a wheelchair now. And this was March of 03. And I'm like, I call work, I talk with the one dude, I said, I'm ready to come back. And they're like, what do you mean, Roger? I'm like, I'm ready to come back, man. I'm an employee, right? I mean, you know, I'm on short-term disability, man, you know. I'm getting ready to come back to work. And so, you know, so I go up to medical and pass all these tests and all this stuff, and then I sat in front of all these supervisors, and the one supervisor looked at me and says, I know Roger, man. He's a damn good worker. I want him to come in. He can come work in my department, man. And I went with him and went back to work. Because they didn't want me to go. What do you mean you want to go work? You know, I went. Again, I went down to disability. They told me I wasn't disabled. I didn't qualify. Because I had a good job. I was making good money, had good benefits, had good insurance, and that's what was given to me. You know what I mean? You know, it's what I did. I worked, you know? And, you can't tell it, but in 06, I had a stroke. And the job I was working, what I was talking about, was closing down. And so I got a grant to go back to college. I'll go back to, at the beginning, I was about 18 months clean. Everybody's saying, you can go, you know, everybody's telling me you need to go to college and do this and be a drug counselor and blah, 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 all this other good stuff. And you can work in human resources. Well, I'm like, all right, I can do this, man. So, you know, I got into Oswego State. And after the first semester, I was there for all the wrong reasons. I wasn't there for me. You know, I was like 2 years clean, and I'm like, I did not want to be here. And so I left, man. I went and got this job, you know, But after this job, the company was closing down. I got a grant to go back to college. You know, I was 45 at the time. And I'm like, well, this is cool, you know. And, you know, I went and I got, you know, I graduated at 47, you know, with a 2-year degree, you know, in chemical dependency counseling, you know, and that's a whole different story. But the year before that, in 06, I was like driving to work, I was driving up the hill, going up to college, and my arm kept going like this, man. I'm driving, and it just kept going like this, and I'm like, man, what the hell is going on, man? You know? Because I drive, you know, I got the hand controls and driving with it and be like going along. I'm like, man. And so, you know, I got up on campus and did that class, and I drove back in town and I had to go to the bank because I had my unemployment check. And I walked in the bank, and she handed me a pen, and I had no idea what this pen was. I'm looking at this pen. I got my check here, and I'm like, I didn't know how to hold a pen. And I'm like, I didn't know how to write. You know? And I'm like, what? And they got that little table down below, and I put it there, and they know me there. And when I started to write it, I wrote the R backwards, and then I just scribbled. And, you know, they gave me my money, and I had a math class I had to go to in town. They had off-campus math, and we had a big test that day. And my buddy James, God rest his soul, he's my road trip buddy, man. And he, you know, God rest his soul, he died just after I moved down here in 2010. Me and him used to do a lot of asphalt recovery, man. You know, when he got clean, I turned him on. We used to go all up and down the East Coast, man, to all kinds of conventions, Ocean City, Maryland, and everything. And, you know, I told him what was going on with me, man. We, you know, he's in class with me. And so he goes to get to the professor. It wasn't my idea. And they go out in the hallway, and I'm like, I'm cool, man. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know. I have no idea what's going on with me. And they give me this blue paper. And I don't know what to do with it. I'm holding a pen again. I'm looking at it. And I have no idea what's going on. And so I put the paper down, and, you know, and they pass the test out, and there it is again, that word name. And what do I do? So I take my hand, I put the pen in my hand, and I'm like, all right. I wrote the R backwards again. And they like, nah, you're going to the hospital. But I talked them into letting me drive home and then go to the hospital. That's how good of a dope fiend I was. You know? And, you know, that's today. That's what my, you know, you can't tell that I had a stroke. You know, because, you know, I do a lot of cardio, a lot of exercising today. You know, I quit smoking cigarettes 12 years ago. I was laying in bed just wheezing. I'm like, man, I got to give this crap up. And I did that, and I started exercising in my wheelchair. You know, and then somebody told me you ought to do this 5K turkey trot, and I did that. And I'm like, cool. And then I'd start, you know, 3-4 days a week. I was doing, they had this trail I could go on. I'm doing 7 to 10 miles a day with Eva. Now she can't do that because she's got arthritis. She's got arthritis in her back leg. She's working on, yeah, 8 years. Probably, you know, if you've seen me in the last 8 years, you've seen her, because where she's not welcome, I'm not, you know. And that, I didn't like what happened there, Richard. That's, you know. But, you know, with that stroke, you know, you can't tell that, you know, I mean, the damage, you know, there's, you know, sometimes my speech will slur. I got to slow down. I'll get that glitch, like I'll forget what I'm talking about. I mean, it's gone. You know, I'll have to, hey, Keith, what was I talking about, you know? And, you know, and it just happens. And, you know, I'm not, and there's another thing. You know, I need to let y'all know this stuff, you know, because you need to know me. My road trip buddies, Rob, you know, all these guys know. But, you know, I need to, you know, I need, because I can hide that stuff, man. They don't need to know, man. You know, they don't need to know that about me, what's going on, you know. And that's stuff I need, that people need to know, you know. And, like, my whole right side is numb. My hand, I can't, you know, I can sign my name now, and my hand hurts, you know. It's, you know, and you know, the cold weather, man, you know, my stump, man. I don't, you know, when it gets cold out, I don't feel no. It doesn't get cold. It takes a while, you know, for my right side to get cold, man. I'll be like, my left hand will be freezing, and I'm like, man, you know, I need to go in, you know, and so I don't like the cold anymore. But I don't know how long I've been talking. I got my phone here. I don't know how much time I have. It's 1:55, so it's, you know, coming to an end here anyways. But, you know, what was wild 2 years ago, you know, I come to this convention. I've been coming here on and off for the last 7 years. I missed a couple years. But last year, I was actually, there was going to be a workshop here at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. And I came in that door. And I was in next door over here, you know, at merchandise. I noticed my heart rate was going up. That's when I got a pacemaker, and I'm a tachycardia. And I was here, and like, I got a thing I put on my finger, you know, to tell you what your heart rate is, man. And I'm like, man, this can't be happening, man. You know, it's like, I have my they couldn't do anything to my pacemaker, adjust it yet, because 25 years ago I had a heart attack, and there's a little dead spot on my heart. And like I was saying, when I got my pacemaker, yeah, I'll explain that, then I'll end. But I did a 10K turkey trot, and when I got done, I was feeling good. Did I say that? You know, my heart rate was up to 197, and I had to do all that. But 2 years ago, when I was here, I looked at this guy, I said, Paris, you got to go get John, come here. And they're like, what? I'm like, my heart rate is up to 140 now, and my pacemaker was, you know, wasn't letting it go way up, you know. And they're like, you were going to call the ambulance. I'm like, nah, man, just find out where the hospital is, man. And, you know, and the funny thing was, when I got there, they give you this medicine that brings your heart rate down. Well, I've had that done 3 times before. It doesn't work. I was telling, you know, this cardiologist asked me, what is your problem? You should be in cardiac arrest, sir. You shouldn't be laughing. All right? And I'm like, I just want you to shock my heart. Alright? So I can get back to this convention. There's a guy sharing at 7 o'clock that I'm going to be there. And you want to know something? I was listening to that gentleman share Saturday night at 7 o'clock. You know? And, you know, people need, you know, there's stuff that you people need to know about me, because there are things that can happen, you know, I mean, to me, you know? But I'm healthy, you know? I'm healthy, you know? And, you know, my disability is getting in my way. You know, we got a beautiful pamphlet, if you've never read it, you know. Read it. Go home. This needs to be accessible for everybody. It doesn't matter what your limitations or what they are. Everybody, addict, whatever, needs to be able to come to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And with that, thank you. And I'd like to thank, Robert, the programming chair, and, you know, the convention for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, just stand right this man. I'm like,
keep her that side.
Yeah, now she can. Yeah, I don't. That, like,
oh. Let's give him another hand job. I'd like to thank you all for being here. If you'll take one quick minute. Moment of silence, we'll close this out with the wee version of the Serenity Prayer, please. Prayer.